It's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You are very welcome along to the 9 to Noon Show here on Highland Radio. It is Greg Hughes. And thank you very much for Donal for sitting in for me over the last 3 days. Had a lovely few days off, did some nice things. Maybe we might talk about that later. But anyway, we are broadcasting live today from Cancercare West in Letterkenny. It's as part of Your Voice, Your Community, and it's in association with Commissioner Mann. And we've got a whole load of guests to introduce to you over the course of the next 3 hours. Some of the people, obviously, that are involved in operating this amazing service, those that avail of it, and whomever else might call in. And you're more than welcome to call in here as well. Our lines remain open as they always do. 086 60 25 000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25 000. You can give us a call to an 074 91 25 000, or if you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. All right, it is Thursday morning, always a busy one for the newspapers, of course. We'll start with the Tyrconnell Tribune newspaper. And the Tribune understands that Fianna Fáil's Constituency Delegates Committee in Donegal has agreed to a two-candidate strategy for the general election, which doesn't surprise me. The recommendation has been agreed, according to sources, with one candidate in each of the former Donegal North East and South West areas. The convention is planned for August. Pat the Cope Gallagher has confirmed he is to seek the Fianna Fáil nomination at the convention. We understand that Termans, the paper does, Ben Harkin, will also seek to have his name in the convention at 23. I think Ben was on the show, was he on the show with Donal talking about that yesterday? Indeed, he's a member of Ogra. Fianna Fáil is the youngest of the group nominated. The other nominations are Minister Charlie McConnell Logue, Senator Niall Blaney, and Councillors Micheál Nocton and Donal Mandy Kelly. Geographically, too, there has to be a consideration there, doesn't there, as to how you manage the vote as best as you can. They've been really good at that in the past, so we'll see how that fares. Who do you think the two for Fianna Fáil might be? Of course, Charlie McConnell Logue won. Then I suppose it comes down to, is it Micheál Nocton or Pat the Cope? Not ruling anyone out, by the way. I'm just talking about the obvious, what would seem to be the obvious geographical spread there. On to the Donegal News. They say we did nothing wrong. The director of Donegal-based company DPPS Contracts yesterday refuted claims they breached proper employment practices after their company was named in the Shannon. Johnny McCafferty and Kevin McCafferty's company provide BAM and other major contractors with construction workers. Okay, you can read more about that in that paper, of course. Derry News, it's primarily a picture. We're living in 200-year-old conditions. Inhabitable. Residents of Derry City Centre apartments raise concerns over living conditions. The full story across two pages inside that paper today. Now, the Irish Daily Mail, this is really quite a remarkable story, the RTE funding story, in that what has happened, really, effectively, you could say, is that RTE was found to be pretty loose with public money. I think we can agree on that. People acted all on their own to spend hundreds of thousands of euro. There's a serious lack of accountability, and there was also serious questions as to what money was being spent on. Remember flip-flops and all that type of stuff? Well, the punishment, it seems, is €750 million out of your pocket, really, effectively, is going to RTE on top of the licence fee. I didn't see this one coming, by the way. I thought there would be different funding models or looking at things in different ways. But anyway, the Irish Daily Mail tells us that rival broadcasters have responded with fury to the government's €725 million bailout of RTE, with the media minister denying it is a blank cheque. The deal will mean RTE is €140 million better off than it was before the deluge of scandals, and it's left the government facing accusations of rewarding all-round bad practice, handing over vast sums based on flimsy reforms and distorting the commercial market. After a year of crisis at the state broadcaster, the TV licence model is to be retained, with the government committing to an unprecedented multi-annual funding top-up from the Exchequer. RTE had sought £1.3 billion over... I'll turn to page six here. £1.3 billion over... the next 5 years for its reform strategy, with the government agreeing to provide $725 million in the first 3 years, at which point it will review the allocation for the final 2 years. $725 million. What a lump of cash to be getting. By contrast, and in fairness to the likes of Virgin Media, who, you know, they do their own output, of course, there's a lot of dual program with the likes of ITV and all that kind of stuff, but they have their own newsrooms, their own news teams, paying people around the country, doing a public service. We do the same here. Many radio stations across the country do the same, and all have to rely, for the most part, on advertisements and what have you. And then you have RTE engulfed in this huge scandal, and they get $750 million of your money over 3 years. Really quite remarkable. And also, too, on the day, and I'm going to reference this in a later newspaper, and again, listen, I'm not RTE, but just calling it out as it would appear. I don't know if you heard the interview yesterday between Philip Boucher-Hayes and Mary Lou McDonald. Mary Lou McDonald didn't do a fantastic interview, it has to be said. But the level of scrutiny that she faced on the day that this government money was announced for RTE was really quite remarkable. I have never heard a government minister scrutinised about spending and costs and plans the same way Mary Lou McDonald did. And in fairness, the party had only produced a document which outlined their plans, which generally isn't budgeted, but pressed and pressed and pressed. Conclusions from answers were put out there by the journalist, with no right to reply after that. Crazy stuff. Amazing. And I say, just, it didn't sound too good that this was on the day that the government signed off on €3 billion worth of funding. RTE do lots of good stuff, don't get me wrong. But anyway, what do you think about that? 086-6025000. The Independent this morning. The number of officers in the Garda National Immigration Bureau has fallen in the past 2 years, even as the state grapples with a surge in migrants and refugees. A letter last week from Justice Minister Helen McEntee to a Dáil deputy shows there are fewer than 100 officers in the GNIB, which is responsible for the prevention, detection and investigation of illegal immigration. On to the Irish Times now, and I suppose this is not really surprising given the times we live in now, but it's believed drones are being used to deliver unlit petrol bombs to the former Crown Paints warehouse in Coolock, Dublin, which is to be developed into accommodation for mainly Ukrainians, the High Court heard yesterday. Lawyers for the developer and leaseholder of the Malahide Road site, which has been the scene of protests and considerable unrest, said incendiary devices were found near the property, and it seems these were dropped off by drones ready for collection by individuals. Now, this must be one of the most protected sites in the country, and yet night after night it went on fire. Mr. Justice Rory Malachy was told there had been 5 fires at the former paint factory in the 6 days since he granted injunctions restraining people unknown from attending to engage in behaviour calculated to threaten, intimidate or interfere with firms, employees or contractors as they conduct their work at the property. Let's go to the Farmers Journal now. Mountain red tape could blow €3 billion hole in rural economy. Mountain red tape and regulations on farms poses a €3 billion threat to the Irish rural economy and risks almost 30,000 jobs. An Irish Farmers Journal commissioned KPMG report lays bare the economic impacts of changing agricultural policies. Much more, of course, on that, and tons in that paper as well. So the Star has written an article about that interview yesterday between Mary Lou McDonald and Philip Boucher-Hayes. I don't know if you heard it. I listened back to a recording of it last night. Mary Lou McDonald and radio presenter Philip Boucher-Hayes traded blows live on air as the Sinn Féin leader accused him of being rude and not being inquisitive enough. Not in relation to her, though, obviously. She was on RTE Radio 1 talking about the international protection policy document launched by Sinn Féin on Tuesday. It focused on carrying out audits in communities to ensure they've sufficient resources to facilitate asylum seekers and more consultation. Tensions started to increase between Mr. Boucher-Hayes and Ms. McDonald as they discussed the idea of audits. Mr. Boucher-Hayes said, "People might misunderstand from listening to you that the audits are actually happening already. This data is being used and there is a process of engagement and consultation that's ongoing." Now, at that point, he moved on. That was a statement. In other words, Mary Lou McDonald had spoken But he contradicted what she had said and then just moved on to another 40 or 50 second question without giving her a right to reply, which is to say it's not what you would hear in terms of questioning of ministers. But sometimes I suppose they're worried because if you question ministers too hard, perhaps you lose access to them. Who's to say? Miss McDonald cut across him to say, no. I have to refute that. I have to refute that absolutely. And on it went. On to the Irish Sun now, and we've got some amazing coastal areas of this country, but many are unprotected and incredibly dangerous. And I'm reading just this because, firstly, it's a very sad story, but also to serve as a reminder of the dangers that are out there. A missing boy is feared to have fallen from the cliffs of Moher. A land, air, and sea search for the 12-year-old had resumed at the County Clare attraction yesterday morning. It was initially mounted when the alarm was raised at around 2 p.m. on Tuesday. It's understood the boy became separated from his family, who then began a search for him. And that search, unfortunately, had to be called off because the weather has changed and the weather has disimproved, and they had to call that off. And finally, in the Mirror, Bertie Ahern looks likely to launch a bid to become president after bookies slashed his odds of winning 5-1. Michael D. Higgins will vacate the role next year when his second term comes to an end, and former Fianna Fáil Taoiseach Ahern refused to rule himself out of the race last week. Well, he's constantly refusing to rule himself out of the race, which would suggest he's probably going to be in the race. Right, OK, any comments in relation to any of that? 086 60 25,000. Maybe you want to talk about your experience of Cancer Care West here in Letterkenny, or maybe you've got some questions about the services that are provided here. We've got a ton of guests that will be able to help in that regard. If you want to watch the show, of course, and see our guests, it is on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. So if you're at home, you can watch on your smart TV or your Fire Stick or on your mobile devices. And also, we're on Facebook as well, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport. Right. It's the 9 till noon show. It's a special 9 to noon show today because we're broadcasting live from Cancer Care West in Letterkenny as part of Your Voice, Your Community. And we're going to welcome onto the programme a few guests here now. Well, we've loads of guests throughout the course of the day. We're not short on guests, which is great. John Donoghue is Centre Lead and Clinical Psychologist at Cancer Care West Letterkenny. Good morning, John.
Good morning to you, Greg.
How are you getting on?
Very well indeed.
It's lovely to have you with us. We also have Noreen Rogers. Good morning, Noreen. Radiotherapy liaison nurse and former nurse at Cancer Care West, and Geraldine Mullen, nurse in oncology ward at Letterkenny University Hospital. Geraldine, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, I just said good morning to make sure all the mics were working and to be polite.
It's good to be useful.
John, lovely up here. I've spoken about this place on a number of occasions, and I've spoken to people that have been up here and availed of the services. Yeah. But it's all, it is exactly how it was described. It's a lovely space. It feels homely.
I think that's what actually people say when they come in. They're quite surprised because the outside of the building obviously isn't that sort of decorous, really. But actually, when they come in, that's the very first thing people say. It's actually how homely and sort of and warm it is. I think there's a quote that sort of architecture is frozen music. But actually, the interior of this is actually kind of very, very welcoming, very homely. I think when people thought about setting up the Cancer Care West Centre here, what was foremost in the mind was actually how to make it as non-clinical, I guess, as possible. So it's a kind of a world away from what people would usually associate with a sort of a standard clinical space. Really.
But there's no coincidence to that, really, is there?
No.
It's a space where people can come up, have a cup of tea, have a cup of coffee.
I think the surrounds and the environment are key elements. They're kind of almost subliminal elements, but what they do is they ground people quite a bit. And you can literally see people relax and sort of settle down. So the environment, the furnishings, the kind of the carpet and floor, we have, it's not here, but in the two other rooms, the clinical rooms, it's almost like a mini living space. And that's conducive to what we want to do here. We want to actually kind of help people feel contained, calm, kind of as if they can kind of breathe a little bit in the midst of what is a pretty challenging situation.
Yeah, it is. And that's the key, isn't it? Because it's sometimes it's hard to get that understanding. learning or comfort from home, even with the most loving people, you know what I mean? It's just you need some time to get out of that space and into a different space.
I think that's worth saying as well, because there is the medical team, there are people's friends and families, but we're sort of adrift of both in one sense. And that has its huge privileges, because people can feel that they can speak to us, and it doesn't feel like it's having ripple effects elsewhere. So that offers a kind of a freedom, really, in the sense that a kind of a psychological freedom, if you like.
Because often too, you know, when someone is diagnosed with cancer, they often have to be the strongest person in the house, in that they have to deal with the diagnosis.
That's a really interesting
point. But then what they tend to also have to do, and I think it's particularly with women here, and if I get cancelled for that, that's okay too, they end up having to counsel everybody else to say, everything's going to be okay.
There is a degree.
Even though whatever might be going through
their
minds.
Yeah, there is
a
degree to that. Actually, it's a really interesting point. I'm glad you raised it, because what people would say sometimes is that they feel that they have to preserve hardship on loved ones especially. Being ill, there's a quote, I think, from research that was done in the UK, and what she talks about being in St. Bart's Square in London, and crying in the soft rain, and she felt that she had let everybody down. So there's a terrible vulnerability to shame, or to sort of a sense of letting people down, and you would want to lessen that. You'd want to lessen that burden on loved ones. So I think in that sense, we offer that forum where people can actually give voice, give vent to what often is kind of, well, pent up and sort of contained anxiety, and actually being able to put words on some of the anguishes, some of the kind of darker thoughts, perhaps, that people would inevitably entertain over the course of the whole cancer journey.
Yes, but we see this as different people at all different levels. One of the worst things you can do with anything, and it could be a cancer diagnosis or it could be nothing, depending on your mental state, is actually just to internalize it and get into sort of this circular thinking of things. You know, you come in here, you get it out, and then...
Well, that's the substance of worry, isn't it? That stuff just kind of goes round and round, and that leads to other things that go round and round, and that leads to other things that go round and round, and that's the sort of heartbeat of anxiety.
Because often the anticipation of something is worse than the event or whatever it might be. Often, not all the time, but often.
Yeah, like uncertainty, not knowing. The uncertainty and not knowing is quite tough on people.
Yeah.
And so being able to give voice to that, being able to connect, to be reassured as well, kind of a little bit of a phrase that I use with people is, this too will pass.
Mm-hmm.
And what we find is that, you know, the anguish does pass over time with the help of us and with help of my colleagues here as well. We're very, very containing.
Yeah, I've an awful lot to talk to you about, John. Geraldine Mullen, nurse in the oncology ward at Letterkenny University Hospital. How do you view this centre, and I suppose how in your communication with your patients do you introduce the notion of the centre?
I suppose, Greg, for us, like patients, when we meet them first and foremost and outpatients, we're all cogs in the one wheel. And I suppose to look after our patients holistically, the centre is amazing. You know, I suppose from the chemotherapy end of things, we can look after them physically. But from a psychological point of view, the service here that we have in Cancer Care West is amazing. There's a multitude, you know, for people to drop in and know the services they have, be it yoga, be it reflexology, be it one-to-one counselling with John and the other therapists, be it the support groups. You know, I suppose at the end of the day, we want to get our patients through their treatment safely. And, you know, what I would say to patients who would maybe have, you know, second thoughts about, oh, I don't know whether it is for me, I would say just pop in. It's a beautiful, homely place. It's like home away from home. And for us, from the clinical setting, yes, we want to get them through their treatment, but we want to be there and help them any way we can. So, you know, I would tell our patients about it, tell them it's here. And then if there's patients that we're concerned about, that maybe we see that, you know, anxiety is an issue or that they are struggling, then we can refer them and say, you know, John can do one-to-one. You know, Tricia is amazing. All the people here, Elaine, you know, I'm not going to forget all the names, apologies. But
I was going to say, you start now with one.
Yeah, no, but like, as I said, it's a beautiful service. And as I said, since its inception, you know, 7 years ago, it's just grown from strength to strength. And again, a lot of it word of mouth. I met a lovely patient I looked after 15 years ago, and she's over there now, and she's coming to support group. So, you know, it's amazing that they know about it, and it's great that you're showcasing the amazing work that they have here this morning, Greg, because that's what people need to know. Just drop in, see the amazing work they do, and, you know, as I said, for us to get our patients through their treatment safely, we will say to them, and, you know, we will refer them as need be.
Yeah, because, I mean, often to appreciate what we have, you have to sort of imagine what it was like before it was there, or if it weren't there any longer, and it offers great... And when you talk about a hesitancy, is it that sometimes people, and everyone's individual, and lots of people might not engage in services like this, but when people go, oh, it's not for me, is it because they're maybe more private, or they think they can handle things on their own? Is there a pattern that you see there?
I suppose, like, when you think of it, Greg, for somebody to get a cancer diagnosis, their life changes overnight, you know, so you go from being a mum or a dad or a brother or sister to now having uncertainty, as John said, so... The hesitancy is probably just fear and worry. And I suppose we take so much control away from them that, you know, I suppose here gives them a bit back of control and, you know, safety net. That's the way I would describe it. Because, you know, for the patients, it's such an untold time. You know, they're being told they can't go here, they can't go there. You have to mind yourself, don't get infections. So I suppose the hesitancy is just, you know, they're trying to mind themselves. So I suppose for us, it's to make them aware that there are support groups, that there are amazing support available for them. So, yeah, it's just to make them sure and for them to know that we can help them whatever way we can, because I suppose we're trying to help them on their journey.
Yeah, and I suppose people will choose, if they do choose, to access the types of these services whenever it suits them best. Isn't that the way
exactly.
it works?
Could I jump in there,
John,
really?
You can jump
just,
all over
just
the place.
On just that is, I guess the literature would kind of confirm this, but a lot of people run into the psychological difficulties in the aftermath of the very intense, I suppose, relationship with the medical team. So people are virtually in and out of hospital, you know, on a very regular basis over the course of months and months. And then that comes to a stop. And then it's like free fall. And that's when people feel that they kind of, all, you know, come apart a bit at the seams. They think, well, am I done? Is this disease going to come back? How safe am I? And then there are the residual sort of physical effects, like people's bodies are literally, I mean, the nurses here will tell you more on that, but people's physical body is not the same as it was in the aftermath of pretty much sort of very sort of heavy treatments.
And I'm not saying we're all the same, okay, but I do know from the experience in my family is when, you know, there comes a point, and hopefully it's good news, and often it is, and, you know, the person is told, I don't know exactly what they're told, but what they bring home is I've got the all clear, or the cancer's gone, or something along those lines. And I think everyone around them then all of a sudden breathes this sigh of relief and starts worrying about mortgages and other stuff again.
Yes.
But the person, obviously, at that point... he doesn't want to have a cliff edge. They have, as you say, the concern of it returning and all the other stuff and the physical, the physical impacts of it. But everyone else kind of moves on and goes, right, Mom's safe now, so I can worry about other things.
They're going to be getting the signals from people, because what people would say is that, well, you're looking grand. You know, your colours come back. The colours come back to your skin. You know, not in my case, obviously, but the hairs come back. And all kinds of things.
Well, it's kind of come back about 40%.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
You brought it in.
You know, it's good you've got, I've got thick skin. That's it, really.
Well, listen, career.
I've been called worse, I can tell you.
As a man who gets the same type of haircut, so you have to develop a thick skin. I'll come back to you in a second, if that's all right, because I haven't spoken to Noreen yet. Noreen Rogers, radiotherapy liaison nurse and former nurse at Cancer Care West. Noreen, what do you want to focus on in this conversation?
I suppose really that I just want to tell you about how Cancer Care West started here in Letterkenny. There was, I suppose, a little bit of serendipity between Letterkenny Hospital and Cancer Care West from the beginning. And that is back as far as 2009, we on oncology and the cancer services really recognised that there was a lot of psychological care that we weren't able to offer our patients. And we, led by our oncology nurse practitioner, Janice Richmond, we developed a business case and we developed a proposal to develop a cancer support centre at Letterkenny Hospital. But the floods came in 2013 and our dreams were washed away. However, about a year later, Richard Flaherty and Dr. Helen Greeley, clinical psychologist, Cancer Care West, came to visit us in Letterkenny. And they also recognised that as well, that Letterkenny needed a cancer support centre. So they were speaking to the converted, and we grasped this with both hands. They recognised it because they had patients from Donegal and Galway staying, having cancer treatment, radiotherapy and chemotherapy, and using their support centres. And then when they came back to Donegal, there was nowhere to refer them back to. So we got working very quickly together. Grania McGettigan was the fundraising for the Cancer Care West, and she worked tirelessly, and she actually found this building here. And it was modelled on the Cancer Care West Centre in Galway, which was a very well-established unit, from the furnishings to the way we started. I had the privilege of being there at the opening of this centre in 2017. Dr. Charlene Haughey was the clinical psychologist, and Alison McCollum was the other nurse, oncology nurse. Grania McGettigan supported us and done tireless fundraising. And of course, the people of Donegal, they fundraised tirelessly, and through all these donations, that's how this service became here, really. So we worked with the hospital, Dr. Karen Duffy in the hospital. Charlene Haughey started the psychology service here in the centre, but she also came and visited people in the hospital, and we developed great ties from the very beginning. I worked part-time here and part-time in the hospital, so we developed a great team working, and we continue that on today, and that's really, that team has always been worked well. We developed then nursing support and education groups here. We developed the lymphedema workshops. We went on to develop the yoga service. Later on, Alison McCollum, she developed a reflexology service, and I went back to work in the hospital. But we had other wonderful nurses that came here and developed and enhanced the services. Mary Friel, Clodagh McGuinness and Rita Marne. And really, the services went on from there. And John then came in 2019.
So this is, John, this is exclusively a charity? Do you get any core funding at all?
There is core funding. We get funding from three different sources. There are sort of independent grant applications that the charity as a whole actually applies for, pretty successful at that. So there are independent pots of money. Mm-hmm. We get some funding from the HSE as well. We get funding as well from, obviously, the fundraising aspect of
and
things.
And is that a significant part?
Yes, it is. Okay. Yes, it is.
So
yes.
With that in mind, do you struggle to, it's not a competition, of course, but to differentiate yourself from other services? I'm thinking sort of like the Irish Cancer Society or... obviously the Donegal Hospice is held very close in a lot of people's hearts.
I think sometimes there is the case that people do intermix us with the Irish Cancer Society. That happens quite a bit. It's not just with us, it's with other charities across the country, because obviously the ICS is quite a well-known. But we work hard, and I think to establish ourselves as a different organisation. We are definitely a West of Ireland organisation. Mm. I think it's worth saying as well that it's not just the centre here. Cancer Care West has Inish Even, also called a lodge, down on the grounds of the hospital in Galway. And just kind of just some stats on that. Since over the last 10 years or so, it has offered 718 patients accommodation. Mm-hmm. So on average, a patient would stay for about 24 nights over the course of, say, 5 weeks. And that amounts to about, 17,000 bed nights. So that's a considerable kind of achievement.
And
so
I think really the success
that's the hard work of sort of the Cancer Care West organisation. Really.
And I think Geraldine, how long has this place been established now here?
Well, here we opened our doors mid-2017.
Yeah, okay. So I remember doing the interviews in advance of that then.
Okay.
For sure. There was lots of different stuff that was ongoing. But the one thing that was the one thing that people were talking about, and we've heard about it today, is that people saw what was working well in Galway, and you referenced this to some extent, Noreen, didn't you?
Yeah.
That when you come back to Donegal, there was nothing, and I do remember that being, you know, we've seen what works in Galway. Why can't it be up here? And now look at here we are. It's amazing.
Yeah, we have to really thank Cancer Care West for not alone recognising the need, but actually providing the service. So we really are grateful to Cancer Care West for bringing the service to Donegal.
Geraldine, anything you want to add?
I think just for our patients, you know, that it's great that we have it here locally. I would encourage all patients even just to drop in and see the services that they avail of. And I suppose first and foremost, not be afraid, you know, because we just want to make sure that they know of the wonderful work that they do. And you know, it's a listening ear, or it's a yoga lesson, or it's one-to-one, or it's having a friendly chat, because it's such a lovely space.
Yeah, and I suppose as a caregiver like yourself, you want people to get better, and you want them to get through as best as possible. It's comforting that you can sort of signpost to something that helps in the work that you're doing as well.
It's like what Noreen said, we just want to get through, you know, our patients through their treatment safely, and we can offer so much, but as I said, we all work together. The way I look at it, it's teamwork, and you know what we can't give them in the hospital, they can give down here in a multitude of ways. So
I was recently in a conversation with a client, and I made a bet with them that I try and get in this phrase today at some point, and I hope they're listening in. And they said, very complimentary. They said I was like Xanax in human form. But what you could say is our building is a bit like Xanax in human in building form, that we kind of sort of neutralise the sort of the anxiety out of things. We kind of stabilise people, and I think there's a lovely the relationship between LUH and ourselves actually has prospered. I'm in an unusual position of the psychologist from outside of HSE that actually is in the MDT and on the wards of the hospital. So that's a slightly unusual thing across the, you know, it's not often you'd get that across the nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's certainly a relationship that we want to see consolidate and even prosper over the course
Noreen,
of time, really.
Did you want to add something too?
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you about a lady who just was recently telling me about her cancer journey. And she described it as being like an earthquake, where everything had been displaced and she felt nothing could come back together again. But thankfully now she is getting to her treatment and she is starting to put the pieces of her life back together. But she said a lot of that was through the support she got here in Cancer Care West. And, you know, that's really encouraging for us to hear that. And she even said she was even now starting to look forward to the future.
Oh, I love that.
So that's
an amazing gift,
yeah,
isn't it? And
yeah.
You don't hear all of it, but we often hear people say the amazing experience they've had here. And keep coming back as well, which we'll probably talk about a little later on in the show. I do have to take a break, unless there's something pressing you want to say.
Well, at some point, maybe I would want to talk about maybe the other things that have kind of developed
As I say, we've loads of time. We've pretty much given the show over to this just to recognise the importance of it and all that stuff. Right, okay. It is the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. You just heard from John Donoghue, Centre Lead and Clinical Psychologist. And I'm sure we'll hear more from John a little later on today. Thanks so much to Noreen Rogers, radiotherapy liaison nurse and former nurse at Cancer Care West. And also Geraldine Mullen, nurse in the oncology ward at Letterkenny University Hospital. We are broadcasting live from the beautiful, relaxed, comfortable surroundings of Cancer Care West in Letterkenny. It's part of Your Voice, Your Community. We're pretty much dedicating the whole show to talk to those, as we've already heard, who were instrumental in the establishment of this centre, that see the importance of it, and what has been added on. We might get John back on to talk about sort of the services that have been added on if we don't touch on them through the course of what. Why has everyone gone quiet? That's really weird. Okay, it's fine. You can make noise. We're out of the studio. Don't you don't have to hoosh so dramatically all at once. Right. Okay. We have a number of guests with us. Liz Ferris, who came to use Cancer Care West services for her own reasons, which we'll talk about in a moment. Liz, good morning.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you keeping?
I'm good, thanks. Good.
Very good indeed. Yep. And I have a book in my hands called Growing Through Grief. We found it on the bookshelves here. And this is yours.
That is
you
mine.
You wrote this. Congratulations.
I did, yeah.
And it's still available.
It is available on Amazon.
Okay, and it's called Growing Through Grief. What's it about?
It's about grief and how people with suffering from grief, and it's all kinds of grief. Grief can be from losing your dog, to losing your job, to losing your business, to losing your body, part of your body. So it's really all about that.
And in fact, rather than it taking from you, you use it, do you, to sort of grow as a person or emotionally grow? Or I haven't read it, so I'm trying to read through the lines on the title.
Yes, emotionally growing is really what it's all about.
Yeah.
Because I think when you're on the journey of cancer, it is a journey. And lots of people who are listening now, they're going through the journey. They mightn't even be diagnosed yet, but they will be on the journey eventually.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not, but maybe somebody they know might be on the journey. So the idea of why I wrote Growing Through Grief is because I was on the journey. And I wanted to talk to people who were also on their own journey. So I've interviewed loads of people, you know, who have lost people, and it's all in the book. I'm working on Growing Through Grief too at the moment.
Yeah, of course. It's an onward journey.
Is,
and that
yes.
word's kind of become a bit of a catch-all, but
yes.
it means different things to different people.
Absolutely.
Of course. Both you and your husband, Jim, have cancer.
That's
You're
right.
relatively new to the area, are you?
No, I'm not. We've visited Donegal for the last years and years
yeah.
and years, right? So I would say no, but I have retired to the area.
Okay.
Right, last year.
Yeah.
I've spent COVID up here, and we love Donegal. I have to say. Love Dublin. I'm a Dub, but we love Donegal.
All right, okay. And why talk to us about how you came to use the services and what benefit has it been to
okay.
you?
Okay. So obviously being a cancer patient, I have breast cancer that metastasized to my spine. And I found that I couldn't walk. I was in a bad place, right? And Cancer Care West, I have lymphedema from my cancer as well. So Cancer Care West helped me with that, first of all. That was the first thing was Cancer Care West helped me, it was my lymphedema.
And that's with massages and what have you, is it?
Lymphedema massage, which is different to ordinary massage.
Yeah.
You know,
is that about retention, fluid retention?
It is.
Okay,
my lymph nodes don't, because once they're interfered with, they're not
yeah, okay.
they don't work
so,
as well as they
yeah.
should.
And that's not actually talked about an awful lot from breast.
No.
I mean, obviously it is amongst those affected in patients and what have you, but I think more widely, you know, I remember people around me too, you know, the arm starting to swell up, and it was like, well, what's going on?
That's right, yeah. yes. And most people who have cancer, if their lymph nodes are affected, they have lymphedema
yeah.
of some kind. And my lymphedema was in the breast, which is very unusual, breast lymphedema.
Okay.
So my breast lymphedema really was hard to diagnose and hard to treat, but I got it treated.
And lymphatic massages aren't widely available outside
no,
of a setting like this.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
And I was getting it in Dublin, and when I came to Donegal, I thought, well, now what am I going to do? And my daughter directed me to Cancer Care West.
Did she?
She did.
So she's on the good list.
Well, she lives in Letterkenny and has lived in Letterkenny
okay,
for
brilliant.
Years.
So she knew about it and was able to...
She knew about
and
my pain.
What's your personality like before? Would you be inclined to sort of get involved in something like this? Is it in your personality
no.
or did you have to I might have to challenge myself a little bit here?
I'm in sales, so I think I'm used to out meeting people and that, but here is different because it's all about me.
Yeah.
So in Cancer Care West, it's about you. When you're on your cancer journey, you tend to think of other people. You don't tend to worry about yourself. And
mm.
that's what Cancer Care has done for me. It has made me think about me and what I need.
Yeah.
And that's really what I would say. It's a safe place to
And
come
how
to.
Important... I mean, say, for instance, right, okay, your actual condition and your state of health.
Yes.
The part of the treatment that you're in or whatever, right? That's all one thing.
Yes.
How important, then, is it how you feel about yourself? Do you know what I mean? Whether you feel that you look good or you look fresh or, you know, because I know here they do sort of hair and makeup and what have you, and that suits someone, doesn't suit others.
Yeah.
How important is it when you're sort of feeling down with everything else that's going on to get a sort of a bit of a lift in how you feel and look?
Okay, for me, it's very important. Right. For other people, it might be as important,
of course, yeah.
You know, because everybody's on their own journey with cancer, you know, and cancer affects you different ways. But for me, I want to look well. I need to be that person who always looks well. I
and
don't
you
want
do,
to
by
be.
The way, today as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You know, I'm still getting treatment now. And Cancer Care West is not a panacea for cancer.
Yes.
But it is part of the team. That you get your team around you. And my team is part of it, is Cancer Care West.
And your husband, Jim, also.
Yes.
Your husband, Jim's also got cancer as well.
He has,
so it's
yes.
been challenging because, you know,
very
in life,
challenging.
You were, you know, you had your plans. And we all make plans, don't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, absolutely.
And your plans were to come back here and everything's in place. And then sort of like this wrecking ball comes in.
Yes.
And not only affects one of you, affects the other. And it just it realigns everything, I presume.
Absolutely.
And you go, well, this is not what we were planning, because we were supposed to be walking up and down the beach and not coming in here and out there.
And you're so right, Greg. And that's what happened to us. However, the way I look on it is cancer, yes, it affects, it stopped us doing our plans were put aside, we'll say. But we have a different plan now, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You have to be okay with whatever the world hits you with, and that's the way we look on it. We're not victims, and Cancer Care West does not treat you like a victim. It treats you like a person.
And it's funny, the language that you use, everyone likes their own language. Or I know some people that don't are not really comfortable with being called a survivor, for an example. Do you know
yes,
what I mean?
Yes.
And I try and be really careful to use whatever language the person wants, because it's their personal and lived experience. All right, stay where you are. Aidan McPhillips, diagnosed with prostate cancer and also a member of the Men's Morning. Good morning to you, Aidan.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, you 7 years ago is when you got diagnosed, isn't it? Can I ask you sort of what made you think something was up and you needed to get checked, or?
Well, I was living in Galway City at the time, and I was just feeling very, very tired and very, very off. And I went to check up with the doctor. And it was a sort of an afterthought, because I was quite young to have for prostate cancer. So as a sort of, I think, maybe sort of to pacify me a bit, he suggested a panel of bloods, and as an afterthought just threw in a PSA tester as well. So that came back, and unfortunately it sort of set the ball rolling. There was a problem with my PSAs. So I was then diagnosed when I was in Galway, and subsequently went through 2 years of treatment with that. And that's in Galway City. I first got contacted with Cancer Care West there.
So the lodge you would have been going to then at that point?
It was Cancer Care West, the building, the lodge you stay in.
That's the accommodation. The lodge is the accommodation. Go ahead.
They have a building very, very similar to this, actually. And I went there and had some one-to-one counselling and so on for my... I had problems dealing with the diagnosis.
And also, too, then, you thought you had the all clear and it came back.
I then come back to live again in Donegal after the treatment there. And then 2 years ago, PSA started to rise again.
Yeah, because you would be getting regular tests, obviously, and that...
Every three months I was having my bloods tested, and cut a long story short, I'd come back again, and I've just finished 10 months of treatment, and everything's looking good, and everything's working out pretty okay.
Yeah, you, it says in my notes here, you live alone.
I do.
Right, so, you know, I think even when you live with people, you know, you have all these thoughts running around your head. Of course, when something's gone and it comes back, and then you think you've got... It sorted again, you're going to feel every 3 months, I don't know how long it is before the next round of blood tests, but you're probably going, bloody hell, is it going to come back again? You know, you go through these cycles, I presume.
Yeah, you're constantly living with that, and 3 months would pass and it had risen again and again and again, until eventually they decided we'll do a deep scan, which they did, and it confirmed it. And
so in terms of sort of, you know, living on your own, how important then was it to take part in the Men's Morning and other services here?
That was extremely important, as you say, no one to talk to, living on my own. I was having a one-to-one with John O'Donoghue, and John suggested the men's group. And to have other men who had been through a similar experience, and men, some of it got through it as well, it was a breath of fresh air.
I'm glad that you're doing well again. Myra, good morning to you. How are you keeping?
Greg. I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay, very good indeed. 2021 was when you were diagnosed. At what point of the whole journey or process that you were going through did you sort of become aware of these services, and how important have they been for you?
Well, I was aware of the services before I was ever diagnosed, but after my diagnosis, I was just focusing on getting through my surgery and my treatment, and I felt that I was doing okay, but then it started to get overwhelmed and I realised that I needed some support. Now, I have a very supportive family at home, but I just felt that I needed an outlet where I could process my fears and my emotions. And Cancer Care West was the place to get that support.
And you've been talking to John well.
Yeah.
Reflexology, massages, they've helped with you.
Yes.
You go to classes on Wednesdays?
I do. I actually go to Pilates.
That's all here?
Yes, and Tai Chi.
Right.
And they're brilliant classes. They're very, very beneficial for us health-wise. They're also a social outlet. Like, we get to meet the other people who are taking part, and we have fun.
But it keeps you physically fit.
It does keep me physically fit, yes.
You have a battle on your hands. You want to be
as strong as you can be. Because they are so beneficial for your core strength, your muscles, flexibility.
And, of course, you're also doing the 3-monthly surveillance scans.
I am, yes.
Do you have a cycle when the anxiety starts ramping up a little bit? Or?
About a week before your scans do, you can feel the anxiety building.
And do you find that's when you might be more inclined to pop in here and have a chat?
Exactly, and just get some help and grounding your fears, because you know you're always maybe one scan away from something changing, and that
can
be.
I suppose we all are, aren't we? Really,
that can be very frightening.
Of course, yeah, I can imagine. But this is a big thumbs up for you in these services.
Oh, definitely. Okay, I would recommend it to anybody going through their cancer journey.
A quick one from you, Al Aidan. We might be less inclined as fellas to avail of these services. Do you want to say? Just to encourage that it's for men as well.
Indeed, I mean, I can, on a personal level, it was a game changer for me to be able to come here and speak with men in particular, and issues around prostate cancer in particular.
Yeah.
And I would recommend it. Anyone dealing with a diagnosis out there, please get in contact here and you'll find a very confidential professional service.
Brilliant. And Jim says the same, does he?
Yes, Jim comes here, and we both find that Cancer Care West, it just ticks a box for us, you know, it really does.
Brilliant.
And we to say we enjoy it is probably true. We actually enjoy coming here.
Lovely. Okay, what a nice note to finish this hour on. Thank you very much indeed, all three of you. That's Aidan, Myra, and Liz. Back with more after the news and obituary notices.